Welcome to SciShow Tangents, the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green. And joining me this week, as always, is science expert, Sari Riley.
Hi.
And the resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
Just hear those sleigh bells ringling, jing, jing, jing.
Oh, thanks for the reminder.
A croonin'. Wow.
What are you getting for your partner this Christmas?
Oh. I walked into a trap. We're recording this on November 4th, and I don't know.
Let me hit you with another one, then. I just went to see James Acaster in Seattle about a month ago. And it was absolute delight. And he talked a lot about, like, the needs of the sort of five-year-old version of him that lives inside of him still and still has a lot of needs that he has to take care of. So what, if you had a chance, would you buy five-year-old you for Christmas?
This is another trap. I still buy a lot of toys and stuff.
Exact same thing I want now.
Yeah. Sari, you go first. I'm going to think about it.
I also buy the toys that I want.
Let me go first.
Yeah, please go first, Hank.
Yeah. Because here's what I do. You know how you can get, like, slime? Like, kids can get slime, and then they put their hands in and they play with it?
Yeah.
I want that, but I want, like, at least 5 gallons. I think that the amount of slime that you get is, like, by far not enough. Uh-huh. I want to be able to, like, sink my whole head into the slime. I want to put my arms in it. I want to, I want to go outside and just, like, be a slime monster. I want to put it over my, you know, 5-year-old little body and run around.
Hank, you want to know what? I was going to also say slime or some kind of goo. Because I feel like when you grow up, you're like, if I get the goo, it's just going to get ruined or it's going to get on my carpet and then my wife's going to be pissed. When you're 5, you don't got a wife to worry about. You're going to be slinging slime everywhere.
Yeah, I want to put slime on me and then get on a bike. Just ride around the neighborhood.
I think you both could achieve this dream. Get a kiddie pool, get a lot of, like, a big 5-gallon bucket of Elmer's glue and some borax.
It's true.
I bet you could buy a lot of slime on Amazon. You could probably subscribe to slime on Amazon. Like, you can subscribe to bottle caps.
Slime of the month. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got like mutuals on TikTok who are slime makers. So I could I could DM them and be like, hey, how much
did
I get a bulk
gallons?
Slime discount? I'm sure a lot of it's just the packaging process of, like, getting it into the little can. Let's skip that step. Send me the bucket.
The postage on that would be insane, though.
Well, maybe they'll just put it in their trunk and drive it over.
That's a real Santa delivering it on Christmas morning, too. So also very exciting for 5-year-old you.
It's been tricky for Santa since slime happened because it's so heavy. Gotta carry
and
a
so
lot
messy.
Of slime. It gets all over that. Everything to do with Santa is made of, like, crushed velvet, and that does not mix well.
That don't come out.
No. He has a lot more outfits now than back in the old day where he just keep rewearing it.
Okay, now I'm picturing 5-year-old Sari running around, being happy and cute and inquisitive. Mm-hmm. What does little Sari want?
I feel like I would want unlimited time in some sort of, like, insectarium, like rent a museum for myself, maybe just Biosphere 2, but if it was safe for kids, like, just running around.
You want I think my big dream is a bucket of slime, and Sarah's like, I want Biosphere 2. I want to do a Pauly Shore movie.
Oh. 5-year-old Sari would just want to run around unattended and explore.
You want a bunch of bugs.
Yeah, I had so many, like, paper notebooks that I made where I would walk around our yard and, like, tape sticks and leaves into it. And so if I could just do that, but with more cool stuff than what I could find in our yard, I think I would be happy.
I'm so happy for all of our little 5-year-old selves. If only we could get out of childhood free of trauma, I'm sure that none of us would be so driven and...
Yeah, that's what we are. We're driven.
All right. Every week here on Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I will be awarding as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. Now, as always, we introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem. This week, it's from me. I like to have a drink sometimes when I'm out with my friends, a couple of beers, a couple of shots to celebrate weekends. But another couple shots from there, I know I've made a mistake. I'm not having fun anymore. My body needs a break. I've got my Uber headed home. It'll be here any minute. The cemeteries are full of folks who didn't know their limit. It's the dose that makes the poison, the quantity that counts. Anything will kill you if you have the right amount. I like to go on Twitter. It's an easy thing to do. Open it up and see what fresh hell's waiting there for you. But then I close it down and have breakfast with my wife. Playing Wordle over coffee is a great part of my life. If I didn't take some breaks, I don't know if I'd be alive. That much Twitter all day long, could anyone survive? It's the dose that makes the poison, the quantity that counts. Anything will kill you if you have the right amount. The topic for the day is poison.
Up in the air as to whether or not Twitter will still exist by the time this airs.
I may have quit by then. That's yeah. Certainly possible. Mm-hmm. Or at least scaled back my presence. So, poison. Am I right, Sari? It's everything as long as you have enough.
I would say that anything can be considered. You can have toxic amounts of anything. Mm-hmm. I don't know if scientists would look at everything in the world and be like,
I would call that a poison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would they look at Twitter and be like, I would call that a poison? Probably.
probably sociologists say yes.
What about a specific substance that interferes with the body's ability to do body stuff?
So toxin is the overall thing. And I think it's like interferes with body stuff at relatively small amounts, is how I would put it. Is the amount of the thing needed is relatively small, which is what makes it dangerous and toxic, as opposed to just like a food that we eat or water that we drink or Twitter that we scroll on. The difference that a lot of people like to draw between poison and venom is how they enter your body. So toxin is just like, if you want to talk about bad things that are out there, things that can harm you in small doses.
There's always, you're always accidentally saying poison or venom when you mean venom or poison. But if you say toxin, you're good every time.
Yes. Nice. That's my strategy. That's my science communication tip for everyone listening. Whenever I'm a little bit unsure, I use toxin instead. And I'm like, I know that's going to, no one's going to call me out for that.
I almost texted you guys to be like, should we just call this episode toxin? Because I'm having a hell of a time. Making about poison.
We can make this episode in spirit about toxin.
Poison's a sexier word, poison. Though. We're going to keep it poison. Mm.
How's venom compared to poison in
Venom's
the sexy
cool
scale?
Too. Ah, toxin sucks compared to the other.
Okay. Toxin's too technical. Toxin's the nerd version, and then you get poisons and venoms.
Venom.
So
yeah.
Poison you eat. If you ingest it, then it's poisonous. And venom eats you or is injected somewhere into your body, then it's venom. So like a sting, a bite can be venomous. A berry can be poisonous.
What if I swallow a bee and it stings my tummy?
I was having the same question earlier.
if a bee stung inside your tummy, I would still call it a venom because the sting is the method of delivery. If it dissolved in your tummy and then you went, ooh, I feel sick, then that's a poison.
I got bee poisoning.
And then there was a 2014 paper that I was reading that when you get to like the middle zone of poisons and venoms, there are animals that spray. And so it's like, well, you're not quite injecting it. It's not a stinger. It's not a bite. But it's not as passive as poison. Like, you're not necessarily being eaten. You're like, you have this poison that you create. You have this toxin that you create and are halfway active. But when it sprays on you, then that's when it absorbs into your skin or something.
Ultimately, there is a line here where it gets fuzzy.
Also, did they name these two things first and then later they were like, oh, maybe that's kind of the same thing?
It feels a little like that to me. It feels a little like we sort of retroactively had to apply definitions to these things.
We already got these two really cool words, though, so we can't really get rid of either of them.
Rid of them.
Let's just make up a bullshit definition for one of them.
Well, they kind of had a difference from their root words. So poison comes from potare, which means to drink. And so poison is very in the potion family. Like, you drink something, and then it's bad for you, and then you're dead. Mm-hmm. It's like a borrowing from French, so I don't know, poisson. I don't speak French.
Don't that mean fish? Isn't one of those words fish?
It does sound like the fish word.
Yeah. Be careful, French people.
Don't make that mistake. Yeah, poisson. It's fish in French. What is poison in French? Also, very similar. It is poison. It is just spelled the exact same way. Do I know how to pronounce it? Absolutely not.
Poison.
Poison.
Poison? I thought that was Catherine. I thought Catherine was standing in there with you. Just writing it.
She's always here listening to us podcast live, but only one third of it.
What a horrible, horrible realization.
Venom comes from Latin venenum, which is poison. So yes, it means something, but then I think it evolved to something that was secreted by an animal or transferred by biting.
Venenum means poison. Yeah. This is
or
bullshit.
Just maybe probably means toxin, but
probably means toxin. Yeah, probably mean more well, accurately.
Have,
means
yeah, toxin. They might not have even sort of understood that a venom was a thing. It was like a snake bite. Like the problem wasn't the thing the snake injected in you. It was the snake. You know.
Yeah.
Snakes are bad. Things that hurt are like that's the animal's thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas poison is oftentimes something that people do to people. All right. I feel informed on our topic. We're going to move on now to the quiz portion of our show. And that means we're going to be playing Dead or Not Dead. It's a special new tangents game. I'm going to tell you the name of an animal, and you have to imagine that you are that animal. Then I will be offering you something that might sound potentially appetizing to you as said animal. As a catch, though, it could be poison. It's up to you to decide whether or not that meal will leave you dead or not dead.
I love this.
All right. So you are, for this first one, a black-headed grosbeak, a bird found in the western part of North America. Its song has been described by allaboutbirds.org as like a tipsy robin welcoming spring. So they're having a good time over there.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And you might migrate down to central Mexico when the weather gets cold. I'm offering you an insect that you might run into on your path south that has distinctive black and orange wings. Would this leave you dead or not dead?
Well, black and orange, that seems like the don't eat me color.
Does
but then there's other guys who pretend to do the don't eat me color. So it really is kind of up in the air. I think dead. I think a gross beak shouldn't be messing with that kind of thing. I wouldn't or I won. I'd eat a nice bear.
You logicked it all out. I would say as a gross beak, I'm brave. Why am I called a gross beak?
Because you got gross stuff in your beak.
Yeah, I got gross stuff in there.
I think it's actually from French for big, but I'm just
Oh, okay. Well, if I have a big beak, I can crunch that bug. I'll crunch it. So I'm going to say not dead.
The answer is not dead because I offered you a monarch butterfly.
Oh.
I know that's not what you were thinking when you heard orange and black insects, but that is what it is, which is poisonous to many animals thanks to its ability to consume another poison, milkweed. Milkweed is the same type of poison that comes from the poison arrow tree, and it can cause cardiac arrest in humans and animals besides humans. These compounds interfere with the sodium-potassium pumps in your muscles. That messes with your heartbeat. But monarch butterflies are able to consume milkweed thanks to a set of mutations that enable the sodium pump to function despite the compounds. And it turns out that the black-headed grosbeak also has a similar set of mutations as do several other monarch butterfly consumers, including the Mexican black-eared deer mouse. This mutation is an example of convergent evolution. It comes in handy for the black-headed grosbeak, which eats monarch butterflies as it migrates south.
Yum,
so it
yum.
Would kill you, and it's happened in the butterfly, and in the bird, and in a mouse.
If you ate the bird, would you die?
If a human ate a bird that was full, just chock full of butterflies, just like the butterflies just gooshing.
But the bird
out.
On
it, know,
the
maybe.
Bird on its own is not poisonous.
No.
Okay.
I don't
okay.
think so. But maybe. I haven't tried.
Next question. Hank.
It's not in my list of facts. Round number two. You are a yellow-spotted monitor lizard that lives in Australia. You are brown with various light-colored spots, and you live on the ground digging holes to nest in. But you're also great at climbing, and you can sprint on your hind legs. And you have long, forked, bluish tongue that you use to look for prey by sensing odor molecules. This sounds like a grand old time for you. I'm offering you a large brown warty toad that was brought to Australia in the 1930s to help control pests on sugarcane farms, but has unsurprisingly spread beyond the farms. Mm. Would this leave you dead or not dead?
So toads, I feel same way. I understand why this game is so hard, because there are the guys that are poisonous. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of toads that have the toxic mucus on their outsides. And then there are probably some guys that just pretend to. Or maybe my blue tongue has some sort of antitoxin, antipoison, antidote.
Blue tongue could be a clue.
I'm going to say die. Dead. Toads, don't mess with them.
They got these big, like, they have a Chad type look to them. They're walking around.
The toads are the lizards.
Around. The lizards. They're walking around. They're like, oh, delicious lizard. Oh. And then, yeah, they're going to croak. They're going to eat anything in their path. And these toads are no good for them. They're dead.
The answer is dead. As a monitor lizard, it would take you less than 30 seconds of having that toad in your mouth to die. And scientists have reported that 90% of yellow-spotted monitors have died in areas that have been taken over by cane toads. That's a bummer. However, it turns out that smaller juvenile toads are slightly less poisonous to monitor lizards, a fact that scientists decided to use to see if they could teach monitor lizards to not eat cane toads. So they presented young cane toads to monitor lizards via a fishing pole. And when the lizard ate the small toads, they would get a little sick, but not so much to leave permanent damage. And that appeared to be enough to convince the monitor lizards to not give them a second try.
Don't what, they gotta go tell their friends or something?
Well, no, you just gotta hit every one of them.
Okay.
One at a time. Baby toads. That's a wild way to do it. I would think maybe you could like make a meatloaf that looks like a toad and just like make it taste real bad. But no, they just find the baby ones. Put them on a fishing pole and semi-poison a lizard.
Make a little puppet, a little toad puppet, and go, what? Scare the lizard so they run away?
Yeah.
That's how I would do it.
Round number three, our final round. You are the African crested rat, roughly the size of a rabbit with black and white fur that makes you look kind of like a skunk. Scientists used to think that you lived alone, but it turns out that you're social and you like to purr at your fellow crested rat friends. I'm offering you the bark of a small tree that has broad leaves and berries that taste sweet, but slightly bitter when ripe. Would this leave you dead or not dead?
I think we both know the answer to this, don't we? I think we both know.
I was gonna put on a show for the podcast, Sam.
What, do you know the answer? I thought you were joking.
I'm pretty sure this is the thing that makes them poisonous, right? The thing it eats and it grooms itself or something, and then the rat is imbued with poison powers. So he's fine. Yeah, this is that right?
This is definitely the poisonous rodent, like that exists. It's very metal, it has spikes. It is poisonous. I don't know what gives it its poison, though. A lot of times it's insects, like frogs and birds that are poisonous, get them from insects. But this one could get it from bark.
I just feel like you wrote an episode of SciShow that I animated about this subject. Is that the case?
Probably, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because then I... because
but then
I've
put
known
that
about
information where the information goes, which is to the ether, to the space between the worlds.
Then it became a lingering fun fact in my brain where come time for this episode, I was like, I think I know about a poisonous rodent.
Oh, shoot. Now I'm doubting myself. I think he's okay, though.
Yeah. The bark, it's fine.
The answer, indeed, is not dead. In fact, as you were saying, you probably should chew on this bark if you are this rodent, because this is the poison arrow tree, which I mentioned earlier, and it's very toxic to mammals. It can lead to vomiting, difficulty breathing, and cardiac arrest at high doses. It can also be used as heart medicines at lower doses. But you know what's also poisonous? The fur of the African crested rat, because the rat likes to chew on this bark. When researchers studied the rat in captivity, they watched them take their spit after chewing and apply it to their fur, coating it in the poison. And they hypothesized that the rats are able to tolerate the toxins from the bark because of their four-chambered stomachs and all the gut bacteria that can break this stuff down. And then they just wipe the poison on their bodies.
Cool.
Also, the berries, when ripe, are not poisonous. Only the bark
of
the tree, not of the rats. The rats' berries don't mess with. Well, that means that Sam has 2 points and Sari got all three of those right. Next up, we're going to take a short break. Then it will be time for the fact.
Sari, Hank, real fast, tell me what's the easiest choice that you can make of all choices.
The pizza that is currently in the fridge.
Oh, baby, I love to hear that.
Easiest choice? Take a nap, always. What do I want to do? Lay? Nothing.
That's great. Hey, here's a super easy choice, just right off the top of my head. Selling with Shopify. Now, I know all about Shopify, the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, online or in person, with the internet's best converting checkout, 35% better on average compared to other leading e-commerce platforms. But Hank, why don't you tell us why you and your company, DFTBA, love Shopify so much?
We started DFTBA in 2007, and we had some non-Shopify providers early on, and switching over to Shopify was the best choice that we could have made. Now, we didn't know that when we made it, but it seemed like they knew what was going on and they were going to be around for a long time. And it turned out we were right. And now they really are the industry standard. They have a whole developer ecosystem where lots of people make products inside of their app system. And so you can always add new and cool things into your Shopify so that you can get all of the things that you need to get done for your specific business done. And I feel very kind of grateful that we picked Shopify when we did so that we have never had to switch, because switching is bad.
Wondering if you should give Shopify a try, like Hank and DFTBA are using it. Let me make that decision a little easier for you. What if all it costs to try it for a month was $1? That's right. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tangents. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tangents now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/tangents.
SciShow Tangents is brought to you by Rocket Money, a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending. I just snapped.
It looked really cool when you did it.
And helps you lower your bills. Subscriptions. Back in my day, the only thing you could subscribe to was the dang newspaper. And we liked it that way. These days, you want anything, you got to subscribe to it. Here, I'm going to enter a random word and the word subscription into Google, and I'll see if there's a subscription for it. Sponge.
Oh,
wow, I got 3 sponsored results. Oh, live to scrub. Live to scrub? That's not how I feel at all. I feel like I don't live to scrub. I sometimes scrub to live.
You must scrub or else
live like you're scrubbing.
Scrub. Or else there are consequences. Scrub or else is what it should say.
Subscription services have a way of accumulating up on you. I bet you out there listening have had a subscription that you totally forgot about, just eating up money like a tapeworm in your bank account. One time, I had a cell phone subscription that I had for a whole year that I wasn't using.
Oh, my.
Embarrassing.
What? Did you have an extra phone that you just forgot?
It was for like a little Wi-Fi card that we used while we were on tour.
Right.
And I forgot about it.
Well, Rocket Money is here to help flush that tapeworm cell phone service right out.
Oh my God. This is
a very powerful, very visual metaphor that we've come up with. And I hope that they and you appreciate it instead of being terrified. The Rocket Money app lets you see all of your subscriptions in one place, shows you how much you're spending on subscriptions, and helps you cancel ones that you don't want, like the tapeworm. And Rocket Money shows you all of your spending, helps you budget, helps you save, helps you thrive, helps you evacuate your bowels from a financial perspective, at least. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/tangents. That's rocketmoney.com/tangents. rocketmoney.com/tangents.
Hello and welcome back, everybody. It's time for the Fact Off. Our panelists have brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they've presented their facts, I will judge them and award Hank Bucks any way I see fit. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question for you. Throughout history, people have found ways to repurpose poisons into medicine, like Botox, for example, which is made from a toxin produced by the bacterium Clostridium botulinum. The toxin is responsible for botulism, which is very bad and dangerous, and it targets nerves and can lead to paralysis and death. Clostridium botulinum was discovered towards the end of the 19th century by Professor Emile van Ermengem at the University of Ghent. A group of Belgian musicians had contracted botulism after performing at a funeral and eating smoked ham. Three of the musicians died,
and their
organs, along with the smoked ham, were sent to Ermengem for his bacterial expertise. How many musicians, three of them died, how many got sick with botulism?
What? This is not where I thought this question was going to go.
I was going to be like, how few grams of botulism can it be and you still die? No. Give me a number of musicians.
How many musicians do you need at a funeral is the real question.
Yeah.
I would think three would be plenty, but...
Maybe it was a funeral for a really rich guy and it was like a full orchestra because this was back in the day. But how many... The hams couldn't have all been bad because it didn't say it, just one ham. So how many hams can a full orchestra eat? I think a full orchestra could eat... Seven hams. So what's seven divided by 50? How many people are in a full orchestra? 50. What's seven divided by 50?
Okay. I'm asking you for could real. Have just said how many people can one ham feed? It would have been a more direct path to the same answer.
Like 8, 50 divided 56 divided
Hank,
by 7.
Leave me alone.
Sorry, I'm just letting you know.
Seven. It's the answer is 7. 7.14. So how many musicians got sick? 7.14 musicians.
And three of them died.
One person just got a little bit, little yeah. pukey.
I think Belgian musicians love to smoke ham. So I think everyone is in on the ham.
Everyone's 20. In on the ham. Okay.
I think all the ham was bad. I think they were all going ham for the ham. And... Then,
and they put all the ham in a big thing and they mixed it all up so you don't know which ham is which.
Okay. Yeah, they just had a big ham platter. Everyone was grabbing from who knows what.
Uh-huh.
So I think 20 of them got sick.
The answer is 34.
Oh my God. That's horrible.
So I don't know how, but it was definitely more than one ham unless they were all having very small bites.
They're passing the ham around.
take a lick. Everybody take a lick. Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
So, yeah. All right. So, Sarah, that means you get to go first or not, whichever you want.
I'll go first. I'll dive into the smoked ham abyss. Ants are tidy critters, as we've talked about on this podcast before. Maybe me. I talk about ants a lot, I think. But they can't go to the grocery store and buy some soap or disinfecting wipes like we can. So instead, they have to rely on a hyper-local organic cleaning product, poison brewed in their own butts. More precisely, the backmost butt segment of an ant's body is called the gaster, and certain subfamilies use a multi-purpose hole called an acidopore at the tip of their gaster to spray a toxic substance as a weapon or a defense mechanism. And this hole also connects to the anus and the pheromone gland, in case you were curious. So, three-purpose hole.
Cool.
Scientists have analyzed these poisons and noticed that a major component of them is formic acid, which makes sense because formica is Latin for ant, which can be corrosive to lots of things, from human eyes and skin to bacterial membranes or even rival ants. But they're not just spraying creatures they don't like. This is a multi-purpose poison. The species Lasius neglectus has been observed spraying poison inside their nests or any nest boxes created experimentally, including on their larvae, to kill off pathogens like bacteria or fungi. And no, they are not worried about this disinfectant acid burning their soft, fragile little babies because, as a 2018 paper showed, this species larvae are swaddled in silk cocoons that act as protection. Sometimes these ants also suck poison straight into their mouths from their acidopores and groom the cocoons to remove any pesky fungal spores. And in a 2020 study, another species called Camptonotus floridinus was observed gargling and or swallowing their own poison after eating food or drinking water, basically trying to kill any pathogens before they can fester and multiply in their little tummies. Across these projects, there are various experimental ways to prevent the ants from spreading their poison to see what happened, such as super gluing parts of their bodies shut or making them really cold so they'd stop moving, which is a little sad. But whenever the ants couldn't disinfect, with their poison, they had lower survival rates. So we think it actually does something.
It wasn't just that their butts were super glued shut.
Yeah.
I feel like that might also go on my survival rate.
You know, yeah, your butt and jaw super glued shut, but you never know. We think it's the disinfectant, because we use toxic substances to clean all the time. And like even our immune system uses destroying particles sometimes. So it makes sense that plenty of non-human animals do too. And I guess in nature, mildly poisoning yourself is worth it if it means you stay alive longer.
Wow. Windex ants. I got really distracted wondering one question. What is the hole with the most uses? The most? Is three the most?
You mean of any animal?
Yeah.
Oh,
I feel like
we're just going to put that one out there. Because I don't think that we're going to have an answer to that question that's definitely right. So I'm going to toss it out to the audience. What's the hole with the most uses?
Yes.
Sam wants to know. At SciShow Tangents on Twitter.
Yeah, tell me.
Maybe. If Twitter exists.
Oh, no. Yeah.
All right. Wild. Sari, that's very weird. Sam, what do you got?
Sari and Hank, let me teach you a little something about viruses. And if I'm wrong at any point, please tell me, because this was really hard. A virus, you sort of have to pick whether you're going to go after cells with nuclei or cells without nuclei. True so far?
Yeah.
And you're pretty much locked into that choice. Like, you want to infect a bacteria? Well, you, my friend, are a bacteriophage, and you aren't going to be able to go after cells with nuclei, like, say, maybe spider cells. And sometimes when you're a virus multiplying in cells, you tend to pick up things in those cells, like DNA. Like, let's say that you're a bacteriophage, you probably got some bacteria DNA floating around in you on account of all the bacteria that you infect. But assumedly, you couldn't have any spider DNA, right?
Yeah.
Am I right so far? Okay.
Yeah, if you're a bacteriophage, I no reason to have some spider DNA in you.
Ah, but what do we do when we assume, my friends? You see, in 2016, researchers at Vanderbilt, who are sequencing the genome of a bacteriophage called WO, found DNA that matches DNA that black widows use to make a toxin in their venom. But what the heck? If these viruses only target bacteria, how did it get spider DNA inside of it? WO's target is a bacteria called Wolbachia, and Wolbachia infects arthropods like black widows. And when it infects arthropods, it hides inside cell membranes, safe and sound from bacteriophages. And similar to a virus, as a bacteria is doing all that slipping in and out of cells, it's going to get some junk stuck to it along the way, including DNA from its arthropod hosts. And as previously mentioned, viruses end up with DNA in them too, and they don't care if that DNA comes from a bacteria or a black widow. So now you've got a bacteriophage with black widow toxin DNA, which is what they found, and it's the first time that animal DNA has ever been found in a bacteriophage. So scientists aren't totally sure if these viruses use the toxin, but the toxin makes holes in cell membranes, and these viruses do have to get inside of arthropod cell membranes to get to Wolbachia. So it seems sort of like they do use it. And in this case, I think the toxin would be considered a poison, thus validating this as a poison fact. But there's also a bit of a chicken and an egg situation here that scientists are also looking into. Did the bacteriophage get the ability to make cell-damaging poison from the spider DNA passed to it from a bacteria, or did spiders get the ability to make cell-damaging venom from bacteriophage DNA passed to it from a bacteria? Nobody knows, obviously.
But there are only those two options, so it's one of those two, and either one is very cool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And WO also contains DNA sequences that are used in animal cells to sense pathogens and trigger cell death and avoid immune responses. So while it's way more likely that this virus has just collected a bunch of junk over the eons, it and other viruses like it might have taught our cells a lot of tricks that make life possible.
Sari, I have a question for you, which is, which way is cooler for it to get this DNA? Is it cooler for the spider to have gotten the toxin from a bacteriophage? Or is it cooler for the bacteriophage to have gotten it from a bacteria that got it from the spider?
I think spider from bacteriophage is cooler because then spiders were just harmless at one point. And then,
well, I think they have more than just that one toxin. Yeah. I like that it got it from the spider, because it couldn't get it directly from the spider. It would have to get it from the bacteria that got it from the spider.
Right.
Which is wild for genes to just be like, wee! I'll go wherever. Well, now I have to choose which is the cooler, weirder fact. And Sari's got a point, is a point ahead already. Will it be ants disinfecting their whole situation with their butt poison, including their insides and their outsides and their nests? Or researchers finding spider DNA in a bacteriophage, but how? These are both very good. I think that Sari's going to pull away from this one, but only because she came into it with the lead.
Those points used to not mean anything. I'm offended that they mean something.
They're a tiebreaker. They're really a tiebreaker, is what they're
there for.
They
used to give us like 400 points arbitrarily for our facts. You've changed.
Hey? Well, look, Sam, you got 400, and Sari got 400, she got 401.
Shoot. Okay.
Yeah.
Cha-ching.
Everybody gets 400. All right. Now it's time to ask the Science Couch, where we've got a listener question for our couch of finally home science.
Jan Rhett Sammies on Discord and Emily Nidebala on YouTube ask, is there poisonous venom?
I mean, if you put it in your blood, if you put it in your interstitial tissues and it's doing damage, you put it in your tummy, it's very likely to also do damage. I'm sure that there are venoms that aren't poisonous, that like you're like in the acidic environment of your stomach, they'd be pretty immediately inactivated. But there's got to be lots that you wouldn't want to put very much of in you. And also, as I said in the poem, you have enough of anything, it's going to get you uncomfortable. Did that make sense, Sari? How did I do?
The message of SciShow Tangents is do not drink venom. Do not eat it. Please don't.
Just go to one of those like places where they make anti-venom and they're constantly milking snakes and take a shot. Don't do that.
Don't do that,
please. That's rude, yeah.
But if you want to get really, really technical about it, venom, because it goes into your bloodstream, that's more an easier distribution pathway. So venoms often contain big proteins that can get denatured. Mm-hmm. If proteins getting denatured is just when there's enough heat or a molecular reaction for some reason, then they unfold and then they can't do the thing. So a toxic protein would no longer be toxic and mess with your cells and be the poison anymore. Venoms do have different toxicity whether you inject them or you take them orally. And researchers do look into this, mostly on mice. It's always mice of injecting things versus feeding them to them and to test. And the main thing is that we don't really test venoms, like eating a lot of different types of venoms. But when we do, there are like a couple things we've learned. And so that's what I found. One study tested 17 different snake venoms just to see whether you could heat them and denature the proteins. And all but 5 of the 17, so 12 of them after heating, lost basically all of their activity. Hmm. So
they're just
boil.
That's just protein. Yeah. That's like eating a steak.
And it's just, I wouldn't say that, but say it's like some dirty water, maybe. Not something particularly nutritious either, but there are certain beverages that integrate venom inside them. So like snake wine is prepared by steeping a whole venomous snake in rice wine. And there has been at least one person who was admitted to the hospital because his blood stopped clotting after drinking snake wine. Other people have emerged from it anecdotally fine. I was looking at lab protocols, and it seems like 70% ethanol is the standard cleaning supply for any toxin venom waste. So I would say if you're making alcohol out of venom, I would make it at least 70% ABV, which I don't think wine is necessarily.
No, I don't think so. Yeah.
You would want like a distilled grain and then submerge your snake in it. And then you can say you've drunk
venom. You can make
venom.
Snake Everclear, but you cannot make snake wine.
But
it sounds like it's going to cause a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. It sounds bad. Everything sounds bad, but like high enough concentrations of ethanol might help denature the proteins. Like that's the idea too.
Also would take care of any bacteria that might be growing.
Which
I don't like the idea of.
And then the only other fact I have is that tetrodotoxin, which is mostly known for pufferfish. So if you eat poorly prepared pufferfish, where the gland that contains the tetrodotoxin has been severed and leaks into the rest of the flesh, then you will be poisoned. But tetrodotoxin is also used as a venom by other species. And so there are, biologically speaking, some species that use the exact same compound as a venom and a poison, depending on where you look in the animal kingdom. So yes, even without drinking snake venom, there is poisonous venom out there because they're all toxins. They all fall under the same umbrella, and some animals just deliver the same toxin in a different way.
Cool. Well, if you want to ask the Science Couch your question, you can follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents, where we'll tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week. Or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to Broken Thumbs on Discord and at Reality-3 and everybody else who asked us your questions for this episode. If you like the show and you want to help us out, it's really easy to do that. First, you can go to patreon.com/SciShowTangents to become a patron. You get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes. And we have a tier where you can get a special in-episode shout-out, which is the tier that patron John Pollock subscribed at. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's super helpful, and it helps us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alan Pillow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Devoki Trotterbardi. Our sound design is by Joseph Kunametich. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our patrons. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire.
But one more thing. Goats can eat plants like poison oak without being harmed by the urushiol oils that can cause horrible rashes on humans. And surprisingly, it doesn't seem like researchers know how goats protect themselves, like if there are proteins in their spit that help. But an article from 1992 found that in goats that were only fed poison oak for 10 days, over 90% of the urushiol from the leaves was absorbed or broken down during digestion, leaving less than 9% of it in their poop. And none in their milk or pee. So if you use goats for landscaping, there's probably no need to worry about poison poop. But don't roll around in it anyway, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's still like 9%. Seems like it's plenty.
Yeah.
If it's exclusively urushiol eating.
Where is it going? It's not in their milk or their pee. And you can eat goats. What's going on
here? It's probably turned into different molecules. It's broken down chemically.
Okay. They're not storing it up in some kind of sack or something.
That'd be great, though. That's how the African crested rat would do it.
Yeah.
Just have a big urushiol sack, and it would spray it on predators. And I'd have it on my shoulder, and I'd get it to do it to people who are rude to me at the grocery store.
Yeah. Don't let goats and them rats meet each other, or else they'll start getting ideas.
They'll whisper to each other.
They'll transfer some genes, and we'll all be in lots of trouble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.